नंबर 59, सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत माताजी सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः मित्रो दासीन रिपव संसारस्तम सकृत सुख दुख प्रदो नान्य पुरुषस्यात्म विभ्रमः Word to word translation. Sukha Dukkha Prada, giver of happiness and distress. Na, there is no Anyaha, other Purushasya of the soul, Atma of the mind, Vibramaha, bewilderment, Mitra, friends, Udasina, indifferent parties, Ripava and enemies, Samsara, material life, Tamasaha, out of ignorance, Krita, created. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. No other force besides his own mental confusion makes the soul experience happiness and distress. His perception of friends, neutral parties and enemies and the whole material life he builds around this perception are simply created out of ignorance. Purport. Everyone is working hard to please their friends, defeat their enemies and maintain the status quo with neutral parties. These relations are certainly based on the material body and do not exist beyond the body's inevitable demise. They are called ignorance or mental or material illusion. ಓಮ ಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂದಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರೋನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಯ್ಯಂ ತದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೂನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಾಂ ಸಹಗಣಾರಗುಣಾತಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಾಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಾಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ. ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣಾಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾ ಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ. ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗಿ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ. ವಾಂಚಾ ಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ್ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. So today we are reading from the concluding verses of this particular chapter. Just two verses left in this chapter. So for the past 1 month we have been discussing this story of Avanti Brahmana, and Krishna is giving this concluding section. He is saying that no other force besides his own mental confusion makes the soul experience happiness and distress. So the Avanti Brahmana's realization was that mind is the actually cause of one's own happiness and distress, and some people say that the cause of happiness is the higher planets, or some people say the cause of happiness and distress is some other person who is actually inflicting that pain upon him. Or in that way, people may put the blame on others, that oh, this person is responsible for my distress, or time is responsible for my distress. But Avanti Brahmana's conclusion is that one's own mind is the cause of one's happiness and distress. And then he came to the point that therefore one should actually fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The verse in which he said that therefore let me focus my attention on fixing the Supreme Lord. Yetam sa astaya paratma nishtam. That particular verse was actually chanted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after taking sannyas. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, this particular verse is actually given the sannyas mantra. Etam sa astaya paratma nishtam adhyasitam purvatamair maharishibhi aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nisheva yaiva. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nations by firmly taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And this path is actually approved by the previous acharyas. So in this way, Avanti Brahmana's conclusion is that one's own mind is the cause of happiness and distress, and therefore one should actually fix one's mind on the Supreme Lord. And Krishna is actually repeating that conclusion in the concluding verses of this chapter. Krishna is repeating the conclusion in this today's verse by saying that no other force besides one's mental confusion makes the soul experience happiness and distress. And then in the next verse, he says that, therefore fix your intelligence on me. So in that way, Krishna is repeating the conclusion of Avanti Brahmana. So we find that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in various places, there are various incidents about how the devotees actually respond to difficulties in their life. In fact, right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we can see the Parishit Maharaj's character. Generally, when a person is actually, when a person is supposed to get some punishment for some wrong activity, we find that in this world that one wants to postpone that punishment as much as possible. There are some politicians who took 25 times anticipatory bail. Like they want to postpone the punishment as much as possible. Or one wants certain concession in the punishment or some reduction in the punishment. Or people expect that their own family members or some friends also to share in their punishment. But if you see Parishit Maharaj's response, when Parishit Maharaj was actually, he put the dead snake on the neck of Samika Rishi, and then when he was coming back, he was actually deeply repenting for his act. So at that time, he was thinking that, because of my disrespect towards a Brahmana or a godly person, it is certain that some misfortune will come upon me. And let that misfortune, let that difficulty come to me immediately, and let it come to me with full force. That means he's not wanting any postponement of the miseries. And he's not wanting any concession in it. Let it come to me in full force. And let it not actually go to any of my family members. Let me only actually suffer for all the miseries. So, Prabhupada explains that these are the thoughts of a responsible devotee or a responsible person. That he took full responsibility for his mistake and he didn't want any concession or postponement. So we find that various incidents in the Bhagavatam, the same Parishit Maharaj, later when he got the news that he is supposed to die within 7 days and then he decides to fast until death. And then when he renounces the kingdom and he goes to the banks of the Ganges. At that time, the so many sages from different parts of the universe, they actually arrive there. So there Parishit Maharaj says that, like, normally to get the association of such great sages is actually very rare. Normally, you sages would not associate with the royal persons. You would actually keep the royal persons at a great distance, just like one would go to pass tool at a distant place from the house in the olden times. So normally it is very difficult to get the association of a persons like you, but still you have actually voluntarily you have come and then you are giving your association to me. My conclusion is that it is because that I am connected with my grandparents Pandavas. Because my grandparents Pandavas, they are actually great devotees of Krishna. So because of my connection with the Pandavas, therefore you are actually coming and giving the association to me. So we see here that Parikshit Maharaj does not think that, oh, because I am a great king, I am a great devotee, so therefore they are actually giving their association to me. There he is actually giving the credit to his grandparents when some good is happening in his life, that he feels that he doesn't think that, oh, it is because of my past good deeds I am getting this benefit. Generally, like we this topic that why do bad things happen to good people? This is one of the interesting topic in the Gita course, in which we explain the law of karma. So many times people have this question: why do bad things happen to good people? But we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam that sometimes there are devotees who say that why such a good thing is happening to a bad person like me. So Parikshit Maharaj, he felt that he has committed a mistake and he feels that I definitely deserve such a punishment, and he is wanting the punishment in full. And then when such a good thing is happening in his life, that so many sages are coming and giving their association to him, he feels that actually, according to me, in my life, I have not performed any good activity that I am getting such a great benefit in the form of the sadhu sangha. It must be because of my connection with my grandparents, the Pandavas, who are great devotees of the Lord. Even Uttanupad, Uttanupad was also thinking that when I am actually such a bad person, by such a good thing happening to me. Like when Dhruva Maharaj became a great devotee, Uttanupad also thought like that. So this is an example of Parikshit Maharaj, how we can see the one of the first hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He actually gave up the thought of revenge towards Sringi. And because he gave up the thought of revenge towards Sringi, he was able to actually focus on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And we see the same quality of giving up the revenge or imbibing the quality of forgiveness, how this quality also empowered a person to become the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the third canto, when Maitreya Rishi is describing to Vidur, he says that once the four Kumaras, they went to Lord Ananta, and Lord Ananta spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to the four Kumaras. Lord Ananta was deeply absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Lord. But he actually came out of his absorption just to render service to the four Kumaras who have come there to actually hear from him. And then the four Kumaras who heard the Bhagavatam from the Lord Ananta, they actually spoke to, the Sanat Kumara spoke to Sankhyayana Rishi. And Sankhyayana Rishi, he spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to, Parashar Muni, Sankhyayana Rishi spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Parashara. And the sage Parashara, he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sankhyayana Rishi. And the sage Parashara, he was empowered to become the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam when he actually exhibited that quality of forgiveness and giving up the revenge. So Parashar Muni's father was actually killed by a demon. And in order to take revenge against the death of his father, he decided to kill all the demons. He started a sacrifice in which he wanted to kill all the demons. But on the advice of Vasishtha Rishi, he actually gave up that excessive anger towards the demons, and then he stopped performing that yajna. And Pulastya Rishi, who was the father of those demons, he became pleased with Parashar Muni's behavior, and Pulastya Rishi blessed Parashar Muni, "May you become the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas." So we find that one of the quality which actually empowered Parashar Muni to become the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the quality of forgiveness, and the quality of giving up the revenge towards the persons who imparted sufferings in their own life. And the same qualities also we find in the hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is Parishit Maharaj. Because he gave up this quality, he could actually focus on the Srimad Bhagavatam. He could focus on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, in one sense, it begins with improper guest reception. Parishit Maharaj was not received properly by Samika Rishi, and he felt insulted, and then he put the dead snake against on the neck of Samika Rishi. But the same Parishit Maharaj, in one sense, he did tit for tat, because he was not received properly, therefore he put a garland of a dead snake. But the same Parishit Maharaj, how he received Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that although he did not eat or drink for 7 days, but he received the message of Srimad Bhagavatam with great attention and respect. With great attention and respect. So this is the quality of guest reception he offered to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore we find that both in the hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Parishit Maharaj, and in Parashar Muni, we find this same quality of actually giving up that revenge towards the person who imparted suffering to them, and the exhibiting forgiveness. And we can find another examples. Narada Muni, he was narrating his story to Vyasadev, and Narada Muni said that, "I was just a small 5-year-old boy, and I had no father, and my mother was a maid servant, and my only shelter was my mother. But one day my mother died being bitten by a snake." So at that time, Narada Muni, he had a small hut, and then he just cremated his mother. But what was the thought process of Narada Muni? He says, "Tada tadaham ishasya bhaktanam sham abhipsata anugraham manyamana pratishtam dishamuttaram." So Narada Muni, as a small 5-year-old boy, he considered that to be the mercy of the Lord, and then he actually started going in the northern direction. So normally, small children who are like 5-year-old, they are mainly in Annamaya Kosha or in the Pranamaya Kosha, in which generally like one is little selfish. But as a 5-year-old boy, Narada Muni is exhibiting such maturity of consciousness. He is saying that, "Oh, this is just a mercy of the Lord." And then he started going towards the northern direction to perform austerities. On the other hand, we have the example of Kritadyuti, the wife of Chitraketu Maharaj. She was actually the queen of the emperor. But when her only son died, she started blaming the Supreme Lord. She said that, "What kind of a creator? I think creator must be an inexperienced person. That how can the creator allow the son to die when the parents are alive?" So, Kritadyuti, like when when the elderly persons, they are at least expected to be in the Vijnanamay Kosha, they are supposed to be more mature during difficulties. But Kritadyuti, she actually started becoming angry with the Supreme Lord. But on the other hand, we see Narada Muni as a 5-year-old boy. He was actually, he considered that entire incident to be the mercy of the Lord. So, Prabhupada explains in one purport that actually how can a person develop such a consciousness when a person goes through certain difficulties? How can a person think that actually I deserve much more? I'm just getting a small token and this is just a mercy of the Lord. How can a person actually develop such a consciousness? In one purport he says that such an attitude is possible for a devotee who engages in the service of Krishna's representative. And this is the secret of success. Na tata yagavan rajan puyeta tapa adibi yata krishnarpita pranas tat purusha nishevaya. Yata krishnarpita pranas means like one who is actually always thinking of Krishna, one who considers just like breathing, remembering Krishna to be like a breathing. Like without the remembrance of Krishna, one cannot live. By serving such a devotee, a person can develop such a consciousness. So we find that generally the emotions of actually revenge, they are so deep actually. Although we may know the philosophy, we may theoretically try to convince ourselves, oh, this is happening for my good, this is the mercy of the Lord. But 5 moments or 5 minutes later, few moments later, without our realizing, again the same thoughts of actually revenge comes. That's why it is said that emotions are like the tail of a dog. You try to straighten the tail of a dog, and then the next moment, again the tail actually becomes, it comes to the same position. So these emotions are actually very strong, and that is why in the Madhurya Kadambini, when Vishnu Chakatipad talks about the obstacles to Nishta, one of the obstacles he mentions is that the obstacle called as Kashaya. Kashaya means that when the previous impressions of anger, greed, conceit and so forth are present in one's practice of hearing, chanting and remembering, it is called Kashaya. Like sometimes, like we may be performing our sadhana, but sadhana is going on. We may be wide awake in our sadhana, but in our back of our mind, some thoughts are going on, oh, if this devotee replies like that, oh, I will give such a reply. So such kind of dialogue is going on in the back of our mind. Javamrat Maharaj says that these are like revenge fantasies which a person actually experiences while performing one sadhana. And such kind of thoughts, that is one of the obstacles to come to the stage of Nishta. When a person is still bound by anarthas, then on account of the previous impressions, the following will arise within one's heart. That is anger, even at the slightest provocation, a desire to relish the tasteful preparations, greed for wealth, and false ego in regards to one's body and possessions. So, we find that this quality of forgiveness is also emphasized by Lord Vishnu to Prithu Maharaj. Lord Vishnu, when he meets Prithu Maharaj, he says that Sudhiya Sadavo Loke Naradeva Narottama Nabi Durhyanti Bhutebhyo Yarhi Natma Kalevaram. He says that he tells to Prithu Maharaj that although actually Indra had stolen your horses, but he has come here, please forgive Indra. And Sudhiya Sadhavo Loke, those who are highly intelligent, those who are advanced in consciousness, they do not act on the bodily platform. They do not actually keep that revenge towards the other persons, and they actually forgive that other person. And Prabhupada says here, forgiveness is the quality of a person who is progressing in Krishna consciousness or who is advancing in spiritual life. And then he says, Purusha yadi muhyanti tvadrusha deva mayaya shrama eva param jato dirgaya vriddha sevaya. He says, if a personality like you, who is so advanced because of executing the instructions of the acharyas, dirga sevaya, because of following the acharyas for a long time, but if you still maintain the revenge towards the Indra, then what is the actually, what is the use of that advancement? What is the use of that rendering service to those acharyas? He says that all your advancement is carried away by the influence of material energy, and all your advancement will be considered simply a waste of time if you still maintain that revenge towards Indra. So we find that this is a common theme in various places which comes in the Bhagavatam, and that is also the quality exhibited by Avanti Brahmana here. And therefore, Krishna is actually attracted to the consciousness of Avanti Brahmana, and then he narrated this story of Avanti Brahmana. And so therefore, we find that one of the quality of a broad-minded devotee is that one does not maintain the revenge towards the other people, one exhibits the quality of forgiveness. And Prabhupada mentions about this term, broad-minded devotees. Like for example, in another verse in the Bhagavatam, he says that, Yatra Bhagavata Rajan Sadhavo Vishadashaya Bhagavad Gunanu Katana Shravana Vyagra Chetasaha. He says that when Narada Muni is explaining to Prachana Barishad, he mentions that one should hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Sadhavo Vishadashaya from the broad-minded devotees. In another place in Isopanishad, Prabhupada explains that absolute truth is realized by the broad-minded man who has attained knowledge and detachment by following the 18 principles of Gita described in the purport to Mantra 10. So, broad-mindedness we can see, one way we can see is in terms of actually giving up that revenge towards other person and exhibiting the quality of forgiveness. That means rising above the bodily platform and trying to see a person as a soul, part and parcel of Krishna. And we will also try to see this quality of broad-mindedness on another perspective, that the first example, we will see the interaction between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Murari Gupta. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually appeared in this world. The internal reason for Mahaprabhu's appearance is that he wanted to experience the happiness of Srimati Radharani, which she experiences in serving Krishna. And Mahaprabhu wanted to understand his own greatness. What is it in me which actually attracts my devotees to actually serve? And he wanted to understand the glory of Srimati Radharani's love. But once Mahaprabhu made a request to Murari Gupta that the pastimes of Krishna are so sweet, why don't you worship Krishna? Why don't you actually chant the names of Krishna? And Murari Gupta, he went to his home, and the next day he came and he said that, I think I must commit suicide, because when I thought of actually remembering the pastimes of Krishna, but when the thought came of actually giving up about hearing Lord Ram, I couldn't tolerate that thought. I felt that how can I give up hearing about Lord Ram? I am so attracted to the pastimes of Lord Ram. How can I give up hearing about Lord Ram? But at the same time, I don't want to disobey your instruction. So because I cannot obey your instruction, at the same time I cannot give up hearing about Lord Ram, I think I must commit suicide. So at that time Mahaprabhu, he actually appreciates Murari Gupta's devotion. He said that glorious is the devotee who never gives up his master. So although he himself has appeared in this world in order to understand the glory of Srimati Radharani's love, and he is so attracted to the pastimes of Krishna, he actually appreciated the individual mood of Murari Gupta and he glorified his loyalty towards Lord Ram. So this is the broad-mindedness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he did not interfere with the individuality of Murari Gupta. He acknowledged this mood of devotion and he actually glorified him. And we find the exactly same mood adopted by Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was narrating to Mahaprabhu about his younger brother Anupam. And Rupa Goswami told Anupam that he also told that the pastimes of Krishna are so sweet that why don't you hear the pastimes of Krishna? Again, Anupam said that Anupam is a devotee of Lord Ram. And he said that I cannot give up the pastimes of Lord Ram. Lord Ram has completely captivated my heart. The moment when I think of actually giving up hearing about Lord Ram, I feel like my head is going to break. Something like that he gave a response. At that time, Rupa Goswami also appreciated the devotion of Anupam. And he said that you are so glorious for your loyalty towards Lord Ram. And we find here that we recite this verse, Rupa Goswami, in glorification of Rupa Goswami, as Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam. Rupa Goswami understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we can find this, that how Rupa Goswami also appreciated the individuality of Anupam, of his devotion to Lord Ram, and he actually glorified him. And that way, Rupa Goswami imbibed the same broad-minded mood of his master Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And another example, we find that sometimes a follower, he excels the master in becoming broad-minded. Like we have the example of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya, he went to receive the Narayana mantra, Om Namo Narayanaya, from his guru Goshtipurna. And it is described that Ramanujacharya, he had to go approach Goshtipurna 17 times. Goshtipurna was living in a place called Tirukoshtiyur. And Ramanujacharya was a sannyasi at that time. And he would walk from Srirangam to Tirukoshtiyur, several miles away. And 17 times he went. But Goshtipurna, he was very conservative about giving that Om Namo Narayanaya mantra to Ramanujacharya. And in fact, two times Lord Ranganath came in the dream of Goshtipurna and instructed Goshtipurna to actually give the mantra to Ramanujacharya, but still Goshtipurna was little conservative. And then finally, Goshtipurna told Ramanujacharya, okay, I will give you the mantra, but you have to fast for 1 month. Without drinking and eating anything. And then when Ramanujacharya started fasting, on the 16th day he was about to die. And all his Ramanujacharya at that time, he had so many disciples, and the disciples became concerned. They approached Goshtipurna And then after pleading with Goshtipurna, Goshtipurna allowed Ramanujacharya to drink little bit of Charanamrita. And then Ramanujacharya somehow continued the fast, and then Goshtipurna gave that mantra to Ramanujacharya. But then he put a condition: you should never give the mantra to anybody unless you test that person thoroughly the way I have tested you. But after receiving that mantra, Ramanujacharya immediately went to the, there's a place in the Tirukoshtiyur temple, he went to the top of that Gopuram, and then he actually called out all the people in the village and he said that, I have a special way, I have a special mantra by which you can go to Vaikuntha. And then he immediately made all the villagers chant that holy name, Om Namo Narayanaya. So when his guru came to know this, he immediately became so angry. And he said that, how can you actually, I told you that you should never give this mantra without testing a person thoroughly. How can you freely give this mantra to anybody? Are you not aware that you will go to hell for this reason? He said, Ramanujacharya said that, I am very well aware that I will go to hell for giving the mantra without testing the person for their qualification. But I felt that at least by receiving this mantra, when they chanted, they will go to Vaikuntha. If so many people can go to Vaikuntha, if one person, for that sake, if one person has to go to hell, then it's a small price to pay for so many people to go to Vaikuntha. So here we see Ramanujacharya, he actually excelled his guru in broad-mindedness. In one acharya actually composes a verse in glorification of Ramanujacharya. He says that the effort put by Ramanujacharya to receive the mantra from Goshtipurna was like the effort put by the devatas to get the nectar by churning the milk ocean. To churn the milk ocean and then to get the nectar, they had to put intense effort at every step. They were facing so many difficulties, and Lord Vishnu had to come and actually help the devatas. And after putting so much of effort, then Ramanujacharya got that nectar in the form of the mantra. But then he distributed that nectar like a water. So we find that in colleges also, when people are ragged by the seniors, they want that other people should also go through that. And then when they become seniors, they rag the other people. But in the spiritual field, when in the acharyas and the Vaishnavas, they want to actually make it easier for the next generation. One might have gone through many difficulties, but they want to make it easier for the next generation. So Ramanujacharya became more broad-minded than the guru. Or another example we find in the case of Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya. Shukracharya told Bali Maharaj that if you give this three steps of land to Vamanadev, that he will take away everything from you. Because he is Vishnu who has come in this form of a brahmachari, and then in his three steps he will take away everything. And then when you lose everything, when you lose all your possessions and when you will become a slave, how can you perform any religious activities? And it is all right, you break the promise. In certain occasions you can speak a lie. It is allowed in the Shastra. Like that he quoted in the Shastra also. But Bali Maharaj, he did not accept the advice of Shukracharya. And with great respect towards Shukracharya, he did not follow the advice of Shukracharya. And he gave several reasons why he wants to give charity. And then he gave charity to Vamanadev. And the same thing happened like Shukracharya told. So here Shukracharya was very narrow-minded in his calculation. But his disciple Bali Maharaj, he was like much more broad-minded, and he actually gave the charity to Vamanadev. And sometimes, in the third category, sometimes a guru or an acharya may be broad-minded, but sometimes the followers can become somewhat narrow-minded in certain thoughts. Like, for example, if we take philanthropy and Krishna consciousness. Like, Prabhupada has actually, many places, conversations, like, he talks about how just opening hospitals or opening schools and he condemns, this is not the business, the spiritualist. He actually condemns philanthropy. And if you find, if you properly study, whenever Prabhupada condemns philanthropy, one of the point which he condemns is that he condemns this philosophy of Manav Seva is Madhav Seva. Or he condemns the idea of Daridra Narayan Seva, where they equate, like, serving the poor man is equal to serving Narayan. But actually, this concept of Daridra Narayan Seva or Manav Seva is Madhav Seva, it is fundamentally opposite to the very basis of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the concept of Daridra Narayan Seva, like serving the poor man is equal to serving Narayan, that means you are essentially saying that the Jiva is equal to Narayan. Jiva is on the same level as a Narayan. The living entity is under the influence of Maya, but making that serving the any poor man is equal to serving Narayan, that means you are saying that Narayan has come under the influence of Maya. But whereas, if we see the Srimad Bhagavatam beginning, Narada Muni told Vyasadeva that, Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadruk, Shuchishrava Satyavrata Dritavrata. He said that, you must now meditate upon the pastimes of the Lord, and then you write Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Vyasadeva started meditating upon the Supreme Lord. And what did he see in his meditation? Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashrayam. He performed a meditation with a heart purified by bhakti yoga. And in his meditation, he saw the Purna Purushottam Bhagavan, and not only he saw Bhagavan, but he saw the Maya potency under the complete control of the Supreme Lord. So this is like the, after that, then Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this vision of Vyasadeva is like the basis of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he saw the Supreme Lord and under whose control Maya was there. But this concept of Daridra Narayan Seva, it says that Lord Narayan comes under the influence of Maya. And he has become the Jiva. Or the Brahman, by coming in contact with the mode of passion, he becomes the Jiva. And therefore, serving the Jiva, serving this poor man is equal to serving Narayan. So this is the one Pran Prabhupada actually condemns when he talks about philanthropy. But otherwise, there are other statements where Prabhupada actually encourages the dana, because dana dharma, giving charity, is actually one of the principles of dharma. In the 12th chapter of the Gita, when Krishna says that, oh, if you cannot fix your mind on me, if you fix your intelligence on me, if you cannot do that, perform sadhana bhakti, if you cannot do that, at least work for me. If you cannot even work for me, at least sacrifice your possessions for some good cause. By opening some hospitals or schools or something like that for some good cause. So in that sense, philanthropy is actually, philanthropy is there. Like Krishna, every day in Dwaraka, he would give so many cows in charity. But when we make that charity as serving a poor man is equal to Narayan, then that means there is a Mayavad philosophy. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna encourages that yat karoshi yadashnasi yajjuhoshi dadasi yat. That whatever charity you give away, do it as an offering to me. Do it in Krishna consciousness. And we find the story of Prithu Maharaj, when the citizens were starving of hunger, that Prithu Maharaj, he actually understood that the cause of the problem is Mother Earth. And then he became angry with Mother Earth. And when he was about to attack Mother Earth, Earth assumed the form of a cow. But still, Prithu Maharaj did not get carried away with the external form of Mother Earth. And then he went after Mother Earth. And then he even told Mother Earth, if you don't produce food grains for my citizens, then I will kill you and I will feed the citizens with the flesh of your body. So, in fact, this whole activity of Prithu Maharaj was glorified in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Prithu Maharaj, as a responsible king, he was trying to provide the necessities of the citizens. So, therefore, in one class, Radhanath Maharaj mentioned that philanthropy is not the goal, but philanthropy can be used as a tool to give Krishna consciousness. It can be used as a tool to open up the hearts of the people, and then we can give Krishna consciousness. So therefore, that sometimes when people take, say, one set of statements of Prabhupada on philanthropy, without going deep into those statements, and they can come to a narrow-minded conclusion, without seeing the other episodes in the scripture, without seeing the other statements in the even in Prabhupada's purports. Or in that way one can become narrow-minded. Or another example is that direct preaching and indirect preaching. Like we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni meets Vyasadev, he says that Jugupsitam dharma kritenu shasata swabhava raktasya mahan vyatikrama. He says that you have performed an abominable activity, you have performed a great mistake. You have written so many books in which you actually encouraged people to perform sense gratification. Now you must write a book in which you can exclusively glorify Krishna. So when we take this particular verse, Narada Muni is chastising Vyasadeva for writing so many literatures in which he has actually encouraged dharma, artha, kama, moksha, where he has encouraged people to perform bhakti as a tool or bhakti as a means to attain swarga or to attain certain material benefits. So Narada Muni appears to condemn. Narada Muni is condemning Vyasadeva for writing so many other books. But whereas we also find in the Srimad Bhagavatam another verse where Krishna is telling to Uddhava, Paroksha Vada Rishaya Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. Different Vedic literatures, they glorify me in an indirect way, and I am also pleased even by that indirect glorification. So this verse seems to be exactly in opposite conclusion what Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva. Or like or another example, like in the first canto we find that Prabhupada writes in a purport that like Krishna has spoke the direct conclusion of the scriptures in the Bhagavad Gita, and Vyasadeva has placed the Bhagavad Gita within the Mahabharata. And that Mahabharata contains so many other stories. And in order to attract the people, and then when they read those stories, and then they will come to the point of reading Gita, and then they will get the conclusion of the entire Vedic literatures. So Prabhupada says that in this way, Krishna and Vyasadeva both are in a transcendental plane, and they have collaborated together in order to help the conditioned souls. So there is a cooperation or a collaboration between direct preaching and indirect preaching. Indirect preaching, it opens up the hearts of the people to receive the direct message. In that way, direct preaching should also go on one side. That way, there is an interdependence. Or another example, for example, Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he says that if a person does not accept Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, there is no point in reading Gita. One has to accept the position of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. But in another purport in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that even if a person does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but if that person accepts the principles of Krishna, one will be benefited. So here Prabhupada is trying to accommodate even those people who don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but who accept the teachings of Krishna. In fact, the same mood is also adapted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells writes in Krishna Samhita, he says that we leave it to our readers to decide how to deal with Mahaprabhu. The Vaishnavas have accepted him as the great Supreme Lord, as Krishna himself. But those who are not prepared to accept this perspective may think of Lord Chaitanya as a noble and a holy teacher. This is all we want our readers to believe. We make no objection if the reader does not believe his miracles, as miracles alone never demonstrate Godhead. Even demons like Ravana also performed miracles. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that even if you don't accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord, it is all right. But you try to understand the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You try to follow the process given by Lord Chaitanya. And when they do that, they will be inspired from within to accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord. So in that way, we find in the Shastra that there are statements which encourage direct preaching, there are statements which also support indirect preaching. So therefore, when we read the Shastras, when there are two statements in the Shastra, when there are two statements in the Srila Prabhupada's purports, when they appear to be conflicting with each other, we cannot reject either statement for the sake of the other statement. It is like, suppose when a cow is being attacked by a tiger, you protect the cow and you can kill the tiger. But when two cows are fighting with each other, you cannot protect one cow by killing the other cow. You have to protect both the cows. So similarly, like when a statement in the Shastra, when it is contradicted by statement outside the Shastra, then we have to defend the statements of the Shastra and prove that how the other statements outside the Shastra is actually defective. But when two statements in the Shastra, when they appear to be conflicting with each other, we have to give a overall perspective which will accommodate both the statements. So, and another example, we can see in nationalism and Krishna consciousness. Like in the Rupa Goswami quotes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatrika Vidim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpata Yaiva Kalpati. When a person performs bhakti by disregarding the Shruti and Smriti, it will create a havoc in a society. And Isopanishad is considered to be one of the Shruti. And in the Isopanishad purport, Prabhupada says that he explains that there is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities according to the Ishavasya principle. So here, Prabhupada is actually saying that there is no harm in actually being a nationalist or a philanthropist or a humanist, but what one should be careful of is that one should dotail these propensities according to the Ishavasya principle, how the Lord is the proprietor, and we should accept only whatever is our quota. And Another place in the in one Gita lecture in London, Prabhupada says that one of the quality of a devotee is actually daksha. And if there is a need of fighting, a devotee can fight also expertly. And Krishna consciousness does not mean one-sided. Just like Krishna is all-pervading, Krishna consciousness movement also should be all-pervading. It should touch everything, even politics, sociology, everything if required. So one of the fundamental characteristics of Krishna is all-pervading. If you see the character of Krishna or the life of Krishna, Krishna was born in a prison house. And then he left the prison house, he went to Vrindavan. And from Vrindavan he came to Mathura. And from Mathura he went to Dwaraka. And from Dwaraka he went to so many places, killing different demons, and he went to heavenly planets, he went to Sutala Loka. He started with a small beginning, being confined to a prison house, but then he actually expanded his activities. So similarly, Prabhupada says in a purport that Krishna has appeared in the Krishna consciousness movement. The Krishna consciousness movement is also like the birth of Krishna, and the Krishna consciousness movement also appeared in a very small way. It took birth in a Bowery in New York. And then people thought, oh, it will be like that only. And then Prabhupada, one day he started, okay, now we will officially name the society and we will give the name as International Society. And they felt that, how can we name it as International Society? We are just going to be there in this, maybe activities will be confined to only this particular city. And then Prabhupada expanded his activities from one city, to one country, to another country, to one continent, to another continent. And then he is saying that Krishna consciousness movement should be all pervading. He should actually enter all the fields. So therefore, this is the core nature of Krishna. Core nature of Krishna is all pervading, which means you should enter into all the fields. And to confine Krishna to one particular field or to one particular way, that is the mentality of Kamsa, because Kamsa wanted to confine Krishna only to the prison house. Confine Krishna only to the prison house. Therefore, this core nature of Krishna is all pervading. We cannot confine Krishna to certain particular this one. And we find that like even in the Shastra, like there are three identities. One is the our identity in relation to the body, which will drag a person to the animalistic platform. Another identity is identity related to the body, but which will help a person to come to the platform of Dharma. And the third identity is the identity on the spiritual platform, that is Jivera Surupohai Krishnera Nityadas. The Shastras definitely condemn the identity which will drag a person to go into the animalistic platform. But the Shastras, they ultimately want to bring a living entity to come to the platform of Jivera Surupohai Krishnera Nityadas. But we find in the Shastra that the Shastras also encourage a person to come to the intermediate identity, which will help a person to come to the ultimate identity. What is that intermediate identity? The intermediate identity is also related to the bodily platform, but that will help a person to come to the platform of Dharma. Like for example, in the Gita, Krishna, after condemning the bodily conception of Arjuna, in the very next verse, he addresses Arjuna by two identities which are related to the body. Kaunteya and Bharata. Both are related to the body. And he is basically telling that you are the son of Kunti and you come in the dynasty of Bharata. So how can you actually, how can you act irresponsibly? How can you give up your dharma? And in fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, there are so many names which Krishna uses Arjuna to Krishna addresses Arjuna, many names are in relation to the bodily identity. Like, for example, there are names like Bharata Sattama, there are names like Kuru Pravira. Out of some 25 names or something like 14 names are in relation to the bodily identity. Is Krishna actually propagating something like some nationalism or some attachment to the family or something? No, Krishna's point is that you are coming in such a glorious dynasty and you are expected to actually follow the path of Dharma. So how can you actually go away from your duty? So in that way, that is the mood of Krishna when Krishna addresses Arjuna, when he addresses Arjuna using those identities. And even Prabhupada said that, like, what is the use of being Americans if we cannot do something wonderful for Krishna? So Prabhupada is not actually propagating, you have to be take pride in being Americans or something. Prabhupada is actually using their identity as Americans to actually inspire them to do something wonderful for Krishna. So in that way, we can find that there are several examples in the Shastra that where Prabhupada actually condemns nationalism. In the Pandavas retire timely, Prabhupada says that there are many leaders who actually leave their body in nationalistic consciousness. And such people, they don't think about the higher goals of life. And Prabhupada condemns that. In Bharat Maharaj's purport, he says that there are many people who try to benefit the common people in the name of nationalism, altruism, and so many isms. But one should understand that one cannot change the material condition of the people. One should try to benefit the people spiritually. And another place he says that all these different isms are different attractive isms of karma bandhana. So like that, we find statements in which Prabhupada condemns nationalism and also other statements where he says that there is no harm in being a nationalist, philanthropist, etc., provided one can actually dotail it according to the Ishavasya concept. And Krishna also addresses Arjuna by so many bodily identities. So this is, from this what we can understand is that nationalism is not the goal, but it can be used as a tool to bring a person to the path of Dharma and ultimately help a person to the platform of come to the platform of Bhagavad Dharma as being a servant of Krishna. So in that way, we find that there are statements which may appear to be condemning indirect preaching and also encouraging and also approving indirect preaching. And there are statements in which Prabhupada condemns philanthropy and also other places where he actually approves philanthropy, similarly with respect to nationalism. So, but when we take only one set of statements and when we ignore the other statements, it is like protecting one cow and actually killing the other cow. Like, there are examples also, like Prabhupada encouraged, I think, Balavant Prabhu to start his political party. It's not that everybody should do that. But somebody who has a propensity under the guidance of following the sadhana and with the association of devotees. So in that way, we find that there are statements in the Prabhupada's teachings that on both the sides, and one should actually consider both these statements and one should come to the overall perspective. Otherwise, one may remain as a one may be confined to that narrow mindset. In that way, we find that we discussed the three kinds of followers, that how Rupa Goswami exactly imbibed the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how he actually appreciated the individuality of Anupam's devotion to Lord Ram. And he also exhibited the same broad-mindedness like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we find the example of Bali Maharaj and Ramanujacharya, who became more broad-minded than their guru, who became more magnanimous than their guru. And then we discussed that how sometimes in acharya or a guru can be broad-minded, but sometimes a follower by sticking to one set of statements, and one can be confined to a certain narrow-minded thought process. So I will conclude with this point. Like, we hear often the statement that Srila Prabhupada has built a house in which the whole world can live. So what does it actually mean? It means that there are people with diverse propensities and Prabhupada has given such a vision that people with diverse propensities which are within the boundaries of Dharma, all those propensities can be detailed in Krishna's service. In that way, Prabhupada has given a vision which will actually accommodate people with coming from different backgrounds, and all of them can be engaged. And when we actually imbibe that mood of Srila Prabhupada, one becomes the broad-minded follower of Srila Prabhupada. And then we discuss another quality, the quality of broad-mindedness in also in relation to the attitude of forgiveness and not taking revenge from the examples of Parikshit Maharaj and Parashar Rishi. So with this, I'll conclude this class. I think Baldev Prabhu will make some announcements. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
Right. Thank you, Radhikavala Prabhu, for such wonderful nectar from the Bhagavatam. We have some few announcements for the ongoing book distribution marathon. Today is a very, very auspicious day. It's Mokshada Ekadashi, and also